Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
Everybody, welcome to the TechPoint Africa podcast. My name is Ogeneremu and I'll be your host for today. So as you saw from the intro, we're going to be talking about something really interesting. You saw the trailer for the Aniku Lakpo movie. I hope I did not murder this. I'm really sorry to every Yoruba person out there. Sorry. But you saw the trailer for the movie and everybody has been talking about the movie for like a month now. I think it was released in October. And everyone has been talking about it, has been trending. We've seen it become one of the, I think it was trending as the one for non-English speaking movies on Netflix, has trended on Netflix, top watched movies on Netflix in Nigeria for like about a month until Sole Abiodun. Sorry again, Yoruba people, really sorry. But yeah, it was trending before Sole. Okay, let me not do that. So it was trending before that movie came on and took its place. But that's not what we're going to be talking about today. Today we're going to be talking to someone that did some really interesting things in that movie. And you saw the intro, yeah? So he was the one that did the visual effects for that bird. And he'll be talking to us about so many interesting things today. And his name is Uche Anisiuba. I hope I did not murder that.
Yes, good.
Okay. I heard him. Okay. So, hi, Uche. Welcome to the TechPoint Africa podcast.
Hello. Thank you.
Right. You're very welcome. Yeah. So, how are you doing? How's today been?
Oh, today has been amazing.
I don't know if I want to trust the way you said that, but let's see.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we're talking about the visual effects industry today. We're talking about what you did with Aniku Lakpo. Hopefully I didn't murder that again. I'm going to just ignore if I murder the name of the movie, but yeah, we're fine. And we're talking about that. We're talking about the VFX industry in Nigeria in general. And so just so I'm not assuming that everybody knows what visual effects is. So maybe you just give us a quick rundown of what it is. Like, if you're explaining to a five-year-old or a teenager, someone that doesn't really understand what you do. So,
yes. So VFX is, simply put, visual effects, FX for effects. It's what people call movie magic. It's like the hocus pocus for films. If you've ever been a fan of the Avengers movie franchise, I would say go watch the behind the scenes. And you'd be amazed, you'd be amused, and you'd appreciate what a lot of artists put in to make the best movies that you love dearly. So VFX simply is recreating things that typically are outside the realms of what's possible in live action, or too risky for what's possible in live action. Not always the case, but in some cases, it's a lot easier to do it than in live action. And so it's just using tool sets, computer tool sets, to mess with reality and make something amazing.
Right. So it's not just applicable to movies now, yeah?
Oh, yes. So it's not just applicable to movies. I've seen people who do visual effects for, like, architecture, who, like, re-envision a house on an empty land, but you see the video and the house is really there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good for making pitches and getting investors to fund, like, a property type project.
Right. So how did you get into VFX?
Oh, yes. So a couple of things. I think, let me make a slight correction with the Aniku Lakpo.
Yeah.
So I worked in collaboration with someone called Emmanuel Bassi, who's also an amazing visual effects
artist. Yeah, I think I saw some YouTube videos.
Yes. So the project was primarily from him. So he handled some of the effects, but I focused more on the rigging, the animation, and some of the camera tracking. I would delve into some of these things because, yeah, jargons. But you asked the question.
Yeah, like how did you get into...
Oh, yes. So, like most of us growing up, I've always been a fan of movies, cartoons, video games, you know, same thing, everybody. Disney with Aladdin and all those stuff, Lion King. And I never thought I'd get into animation or visual effects, but I think it was sometime in 2010. Yes, 2010, I think. There was a movie that was pretty popular then. It was called Beowulf. Amazing movie, Tana, if you can check it out.
Okay.
And I was watching it with some people, and I remember someone in the background saying, "Hi, Oyibo people don't finish us." And I'm like, "Ah, which one of the Oyibo people don't finish us? Share that computer. We can go to Computer Village, Otiba, buy the thing, learn the thing, you know, and do it." And I think that was the spark. I was a mass communication student at the time, although I've always been in like visual arts. I've always been drawing. I think my first memory is me drawing my dad. So I've always been drawing. And I've always been one to win like art competitions in school, or best in art and all that stuff. Growing up, my parents looked at my results. You know, they skip subjects. They skip like art. They're like, where's the math? Where's the math? Because they know the arts is already.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always had that. And so when I saw that movie in 2010, I got really inspired to learn. Same time, I also was doing internship with Lagos Television at Gidinbi, and they had like a trade fair of some sort wherein Samsung just launched like a 3D movie. And so the whole idea, and so I was watching a visual effects movie at the time there. Luckily for me, I met an architect who had some of the, and so I was speaking to him and he had some of the 3D softwares used in the movie, and I was intrigued. I was like, yeah, he said there's 3D marks, there's this, there's that. Mm. I should come collect it from him. And so there started, collected it from him, started reading tutorials, 1,000-something pages, little by little. Thank God for YouTube, it's a lot easier these days, you know, on Google search. And so I started out being self-taught mostly. And then I did NYSC. So that was 2010. 2013, I did my NYSC in Osun State. Luckily for me, the place I did it, there was almost 24 hours light. So I was like, okay, so I did my first few months, came back to Lagos, got my computers, got like a lot of tutorials, went back there and just zoned in and learned almost through my year while I was teaching, obviously. I was there to teach government and what was the other thing? So I was teaching mostly government, but because I was so focused in computer, there was a couple who was teaching computer science. And he wasn't quite good at it, so sometimes I'll just sit in for him and teach the students computer science. And so that was how I spent most of my service year. And so finishing in 2013, I came back to Lagos, really wanting to do animation at the time, very convinced. And so I took all my service money and went to study in a studio called Orange VFX. They're still around, really amazing studio.
Yeah, Suriniri. I think I saw something about them too.
Yes, so I went there to study, and that was like just me pouring everything I had in. And that day the story began. That's how it started.
Nice. That's interesting. I don't know if... I love movies. Okay, let me not say I love movies. I watch movies.
Okay.
But I don't think I'll ever want to become an animator. First of all, I don't know how to draw. So let's not get into that. But yeah, how did you... What was your first job like?
My first job actually has always been... within the animation space. So, aside, if you discount NYSC, my first job was working with Orange VFX as an animator, as a junior animator. I think, so when I finished the training that I was speaking about, I was like, okay, everybody was like, you know, this guy is good, let's just work together. And so we started like that. And we're doing some projects. And then after a while, I've also been interested in video games, very interested in video games. So at the time, I moved from there to go work in a game company on the island called GameSoul. And we were creating, I think we were one of the biggest, if not the biggest, game company in Africa creating games for the Windows Mobile at the time, those Nokia phones.
Mm.
And yeah, and so it opened my eyes to not just 3D, but making 3D interactive, making it something playable. And since then, I've also ventured into VR and all that stuff.
Mm. So do you still make animation for games now?
Oh, yes. So we've done, so mostly it's mostly enterprise VR content. So we've done some stuff with like Trader Money, Bank of Industry. But it's mostly training type projects. So think like construction, safety training, or those sort of things.
Yeah.
So it's not usually like the Street Fighter type animation. It's usually more practical enterprise type stuff.
I think you went viral in, was it 2019? For, an Indomie, a drone. Picking up an Indomie. How was that like?
So it was 2020, but I think it was when the COVID kicked off. And I was bored at home. And I was like, you know what? And so I did that. And it was interesting, I would say. I wasn't used to it because it was like overnight. I had done a couple of 3D and visual effects projects. And some of them, like there was one I did, I'm sure you guys would play it. I had shared the video. It's called Skilibi. Really high-end stuff. It's like Ratatouille, but creature-type visual effects. And a lot of work took myself and my company like almost 6 to 8 months. And that didn't blow up. And then the drone video took like 3 days to do out of boredom, and that blew up. I'm like, it's life. But yeah, so now that thing, I probably would share the video later. That thing is being played in like a national game show in Japan. And people are, and like they have like their top celebrity guests. Guess whether, is this real or is this not real? This is, and they put Lagos, Nigeria. That's just like my small apartment, just playing around. But yeah, it was really interesting. It was also I had a slight, what do you call it now, taste of internet fame, because people who you don't know start reaching out, and then some people who you knew before but you don't talk to are like, you forgot to me, you know. Yeah, it was a weird time, but for me, I wasn't just used to it. I was more focused on just the work, but it was interesting.
Right. So let me move away from, you know, you as a visual effects person, and generally into like the visual effects industry in Nigeria. So first things first, Nigerian movies and VFX. Right. Nigerian movies and VFX. We've seen a lot of interesting things. Like, I was watching some YouTube videos, like, get a general idea of how the whole thing works. And I saw a movie, and I saw the behind the scenes of the VFX. And I went to watch the movie and, like, see how it played out. And I was like, I wasn't impressed. So I'm just like, okay, so what's happening in that industry in Nigeria? How is that industry growing? Why do we see things like are not as good as you would see with, say, an Avengers movie? Although let's give it to the Americans, they're good. But what was that? Is it a function of skills? Is it a function of budget? Like, why is that?
Yeah, I think you mentioned two very integral parts. I think you mentioned two very integral parts. I think, as with most things, it's a growing industry. I'm sure most people here can see the growth in Nollywood now versus a few years ago. Video quality, camera quality, lighting quality, cinematography, sound, everything. So I think it's a growing industry. I think two things. Nollywood as an industry is growing, and it's beginning to become more lucrative now to do high quality movies. The short film I did, the Skilibi project with the rats talking, was supposed to be a visual effects movie. And at the time when we put it out, I delved into research mode, and I was figuring out how much it will cost, because we're trying to get investors to fund the movie. How much it will cost to do such a movie, and what are the returns on such investment. And at the time, Wedding Party was out, and Wedding Party was the highest grossing Nigerian film at close to $2 million.
Yeah.
Or so they say. I don't know. That's what they said. So and then when we were putting together the costs, what we realized was to do a high-end visual effects movie in Nigeria, you should be spending somewhere around 100 million upwards.
Naira.
Yeah, Naira, yes. Okay. Upwards. Yes, thanks for the clarification.
Because we are saying dollars.
Oh, yes. So 100 million Naira upwards. And it's probably might even get to the 2 million that Wedding Party grossed. And so for something relatively new, some of the people we're talking to at the time were a bit wary, and for good reasons, because it's the first time. And so part of the issue with the Nigerian movie industry is partly funding, but not funding in terms of not having investors to invest. Funding in terms of being sure that you get return on such investments. We don't have enough cinema screens.
Yeah.
We don't have a movie culture like the US.
Yeah, true.
You understand? These things play. There is Alaba Boys, you know, Boys. What else? So there are all these things. Netflix is still becoming a thing. Some of these streaming services are just becoming a thing. So it's only going to get better, but it's not there yet. But thankfully, there seems to be a lot more investors in the space having those conversations, companies getting funded, and then some production, and that's on the animation side of things. But in the Nollywood side of things, some production houses, like Ebony Live, partnering with like international studios like Sony and a couple of other houses. So funding is coming in. There's some professionalism. There's global standards. So there are all these things. Like if you're doing stuff with Netflix, there's a benchmark. There's a quality standard. And so these things are informing the industry, and the industry is growing. But yeah, I understand when people see Nigerian visual effects movie and feel iffy about it, I understand. And we're not there yet by any means, actually. I feel sometimes I watch even with the Yannick Mulapo, it's amazing, but I think it can be better.
Yeah.
And that's what we all strive for. I also think, so that's on the financial / business side. I also think there's a skill deficit. For someone like me, I'm mostly self-taught, but I've taken like online courses, foreign courses, and I have people that I've worked with internationally that has helped. But I think for most industries to grow, and which why Hollywood is the way it is there are a lot of people who are highly skilled in specific things. I'll give you an example. If you watch any film, there's someone who just focuses on cloth. How the cloth moves. Mm-hmm. Someone focuses on hair, how the hair moves. That's if they're doing visual effects. So,
yeah.
Simple example like Thanos in the MCU. Someone focused on everything, how Thanos looked. Someone focused on how Thanos moved. Someone focused on all the effects. And so, these specializations create people who are very proficient.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's a big industry. There's more money, there are more skilled people. But I think, like I said, it's changing now. More people are organizing visual effects training. People are getting skilled up. There are foreign courses. There are online courses now. There's YouTube, you know. And the tide is turning. I feel we can only get better.
Right. I really hope it gets better. And I feel like this is going to be like a stupid question, but I really want to know. So why do VFX in Nigeria, in terms of, like you just said, financing, you need a lot of finance to do this. And I want to believe that it's a profitable business, but I'm not sure how you'd have to answer that. Like, is it a profitable business? Is it something that you would encourage people to come into in terms of, you know, the usual, I want to make some money out of this?
Oh, yeah. So we get paid, like, it's very profitable, you know, like, we talk to Jeff Bezos and all that. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't say it's particularly profitable, but it's, like, it pays the bills in most cases. But I think where the visual effects space is where tech and startup was in, like, 2010 to 2014-ish. It's new. And so, if you're in the space, you see the opportunity. It's teething, like it's there.
Yeah.
Particularly now where the world is listening to Africa, there is a thirst for different stories, different narratives, particularly African stories. And Nollywood tells it, yeah, but they can't tell it like we can tell it. Mm. And I think that's also where the opportunity is in terms of distribution and monetization. is back in the day, Nollywood looked at just the African, the Nigerian markets, but there's the African markets and there's the Black and Diasporan markets who are still trying to connect to their roots and hear all these stories. Mm-hmm. And I have a friend who runs a studio who was working on, who, and the film was almost out, God of Thunder. Shout out to Commotion Studios, by the way.
Okay.
And it's a story about Shungu, highly, fully animated, looking amazing. And their audiences in Brazil who are waiting for that content to drop. So mm-hmm. there's this huge international market. And so I think we have all these rich stories. Like Thor is Shungu. Thor is bootleg Shungu. sorry, I didn't say that. But that's what it is. And so, like, we have the stories. And if we tell them at the quality that is international, then, and I think that's what India is doing amazingly well at the moment. If we can tell them at high quality, then who knows? Look at where our music is. Brenna is, like, selling out American states, beating a lot of American celebrities in terms of numbers. Same with Wizkid. So there's that openness. We see that opportunity. And it's only going to keep growing and getting better. So that's why we're in the space.
Right. So talking about business, so I don't forget, let's pay a little homage to our business team, the ones that are paying our house rent. So,
hi, I'm Abisola Adenoga, the head of business at TechPoint Africa. Did you know that you could present yourself as a reputable brand leader? Did you know that your business can get the limelight it deserves? Now you do. Using TechPoint Africa's marketing tools, we can put you in the faces of a large audience for brand awareness and thought leadership. To do this, reach out to us by sending an email to business@techpoint.africa or click on the link in the description below.
Hi guys, welcome back to the TechPoint Africa podcast. If you've been watching, you know, we've been talking to Uche Anisioba. He's one of the persons I was on the VFX team for Aniku Lakpo. Yes, I hope I didn't murder that again. But yeah, he's one of the persons on the VFX team. And yes, let's get back into our conversation. We are talking about, you know, the whole business surrounding the VFX industry in Nigeria. So let's get into the movie itself. Like, what was your role? Because I think at the beginning you told me that you're not the only one. And I saw that there was Emmanuel Bassi, there was Tunde Oluwa, there was Shola Ojo.
Yeah.
Ola Oluwa.
It's a lot smaller list than you have in most Hollywood movies.
Yeah.
You know? Those ones run into like the hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so my role in the Aniku Lakpo project was more camera tracking. So three things: camera tracking, rigging, animation, and fur. So camera tracking in visual effects is essentially trying to recreate the live action of the real camera in 3D. And so the idea is to have the computer figure out what camera the scene was shot in. If you can figure out what camera the scene was shot in, you can kind of approximate that scene digitally in like the computer. So I did some of that. I also rigged and animated the bird. So rigging is, I think I'll just be breaking down all the jargons. Rigging is how, you know, I think for most 3D objects, they come in as like clay models. They are static, they don't move.
Mm-hmm.
And so rigging is like creating like controls. It's almost like, animation is almost like puppeteering, essentially. 3D puppeteering, that's essentially what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so rigging is creating those controls, and there's some science to it because you need to like study some anatomy. So I had references of like the bone structure of the bird, figuring out where those joints are and how it would move. And so that's rigging. And so for the animation, which is mostly about the movements, we used a lot of reference of real birds and how they flew and how they, although they didn't talk. So you know, but so there's that. And so and then there's the process of sending shots and going back and forth with the directors and correcting things. So that's mostly what I did. And I think Emmanuel Bassi did most of the effects and the rendering. By effects, I mean like the smoke and the rendering and some of the compositing. And I think for most visual effects movies out there, it's usually not a person project. It's a collaborative stuff of hundreds of people. right now the industry doesn't really have a lot of highly skilled people, which is why to do a high level skilled project like Game of Thrones, to take some training, a lot of people to put that together.
Yeah.
But I see that within the next 5 years, actually 5 to 10 years max.
Okay.
Because the conversations are happening. Sony is already partnering with like Ebony Live, so funding is happening. They've seen the markets where the music is already a testament of Nigerians and Africans in diaspora are willing to pay for Nigerian content.
Yeah.
And so the hurdle now is quality. Hit the global quality, access that market. And yeah, that's the business.
Interesting. I like your prediction. It'll be interesting to see if that comes to pass or something like that.
It's only a matter of time. It's like, and which is why I follow the tech space a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody would have thought that tech in Nigeria would be where it is right now, like in the 2010s. Because then it's like people in their basements just program. I know how to build a website. You understand? Now people are talking AI.
So talking about, the tech space and all of that. So this November, we're going to be having the FinTech Summit by TechPoint Africa. And it's going to, basically, we're going to be touching on everything about FinTech. So, everybody's always talking about payments. Why do you have so many FinTech startups? Everybody's always quarreling. Don't worry, we'll talk about it there on November 26th. It's going to hold at Four Points by Sheraton. November 26th. By 8 a.m. if I'm not mistaken, and we're going to talk about so many things. We're going to talk about how to build your own fintech startup, what you need to think about when you're building your fintech startup, how to start a career in fintech. We're going to talk about so many interesting things. We have people like Odunaya Winnie speaking at the summit. We have people like the PayUtech founder speaking at the summit, and just head on to fintech.techpoint.africa to register. Just head on there. And sorry, early bird tickets have ended. When I was telling people the last time I was here, people did not agree to pay for early bird tickets. So, but yeah, you can still register, and yeah, all the best. Just head on to fintech.techpoint.africa. We would display a link and loan, and you'll be able to register. So yeah, back to our conversation. And you're saying it took, okay, you didn't say, tell me how long it took to like do all of the visual effects.
If I remember correctly, I think it was within a month and a couple of weeks. I would say like 4 to 6 weeks, give or take, because there was some back and forth, and there were periods where we needed to wait for feedback and to correct. So 4 to 6 weeks. Which, and that's the funny thing about animation, because it's the thing looks very short.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how animation is sometimes. It's funny how people don't know how much goes into every minute of an animated movie that they watch, like Lion King. Something to think about. If you're watching like a standard movie, most movies are at least 24 frames per second.
Yeah.
Back in the day, what that meant, back in the day of the Aladdins and the Lion Kings and Pinocchios, what that meant was, or Tom and Jerry, or someone drew 24 times for every second, not just drew, painted all the lot, 24 times for every second you watched. And so, yeah, so it's a lot. Thankfully, animation gets lucrative if done right. And then there's merch, there's events. There's, in case of Disney, there's Disneyland.
Right. What you just said reminded me of, I think I was watching a documentary on how, was it Looney Tunes or one of the very first cartoons was made, and I saw how the guy kept moving. I can't remember what it was he was moving, but he kept moving the drawing itself. He could move it just to get one scene.
Yes.
I was just like, wow. So if before computers, this is what you guys are doing just to get people to see a cartoon.
Yeah. So what you're describing is something called onion skinning. It's like it's flipping the paper.
Yeah.
To see. So it's like maybe the character is, let's say the character wants to like pick this mic. So it's like, so him flipping the paper is that. Mm. And so he's trying to estimate between here and here, does the movement work? And so you do that and keep doing that moving forward.
Yeah. So let's go back into the movie and all. So I'm not so would you rate it among like this project, would you rate it amongst like the hardest things you've ever done? Or what?
Hard is relative. I don't think it was hard. I think it was challenging.
Mm.
But I think because of the kind of people we worked with, by the way, Kule Afola is such an amazing director, and all the people from the Netflix team and Emmanuel Bassi and everybody that worked on the project, we're all professionals. So it was a lot easier because everybody knew what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a lot easier. It gets hard wherein you work with certain clients that are not within the space. So we do a lot of advertising projects, and some clients get it and other clients don't get it. And so the iterations, and you're trying to explain something. So just move it now. Like, you don't know what. So it gets hard like that.
Mm.
So it wasn't necessarily hard, but yeah, it was challenging because everything had to... It's a different thing doing animation for a cartoon. It's just not that believable. But if you had to do it better, as opposed to being in live action and in crew, yeah, you really need to go study those birds in real life. I have zoo footages and jungle of that specific bird. Like 20, 30 different ones, different angles, just looking at how it moved and all that stuff. And so it's not hard in terms of the amount of work that you need to put in, but you need to study. You need to understand how certain things move. And that's where it gets complex.
Mm, did you have to... All the research that you did it happen within that 1 month period or before?
I think before. So prior to when we kicked off, we had already spoken about it. I had those references and I had to go study them. Although, thankfully, I've always been within the... We call it this sort of thing, creature animation. So animating a lion, go eat someone. I think something I should do. Those sort of things, I've always been within that space. And so just understanding anatomy and motion and how humans move, how animals move. And it also helped me being coming from a dancing background. I used to have like a dance group in the uni. Understanding timing. So in animation, one very integral thing is timing. Understanding how long it takes something to move from one place to another.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening while that's happening. Choreography is all about timing. So it's easy to transfer that. I realized that most people who are into some sort of motion type activity, be it exercise, be it sports, it's a lot easier to transfer your understanding of motion from that to animation. And so having those sort of things plus studying that animal specifically just gave me like a rich library of how things moved. But like I said, it can be a lot better still because I'm a harsh critic to myself, which only makes for a good artist at the end of the day.
Right. So what was like your favorite bit of like, you know, doing the entire thing?
Oh, yes. I think the favorite bit was actually having the... So the bird drops something and the lady picks it up. Having that just work seamlessly. Thankfully, the thing that was dropped, the gourd, as they called it, that was dropped was, I think they 3D scanned it or something. So they got the real thing digitally, but literally the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the closest thing to carry something and put it inside the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was almost seamless dropping the thing and having the lady pick it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was one of the highlights of it. And also... Also, having the people in charge of the project say, yeah, we like it. Good.
Yeah, that client is always making the client happy, is always
the
thing.
They make the bank accounts happy.
true. That is very true. Right. So, moving away from, you know, Anukul Akpo, and you're talking earlier about talent, like getting, like there being a talent deficit. And what really is the problem? Is it that not enough people are trying to learn visual effects in Nigeria? Is it that the people that are there now don't have the skills? Like, what's the problem, really? Because I know I've heard about there have been pockets of communities of the VFX industry in Nigeria, but not really a lot of cohesive
Yes. So I think it's like it's with any small industry, it takes a while before there's some structure. And so the industry started out with mostly people who were self-taught. And most of those people didn't understand scalability, understand business, structure, and being able to scale. And I think that's something that I'm a bit envious with the startup space, because it's very integral. Have your MVP, have your go-to-market strategy, and start scaling it. You know? And for us, it's something that we came late to the party. So in my case, it took me getting into VR and being in like some incubator. So we spun off a VR company called Quadron XR, and we were in some sort of incubator with Facebook sometime in 2019. And thankfully, I had to study. They taught us business, market, scaling, and all that stuff. And so these things have informed us, and I think most of our studios have learned it in their own varying pace, but has informed the need for people to train more people. So, for instance, in the case of Orange, they have a huge facility that they just got, I think it was last year, last 2 years, and they are training people, animation, visual effects, all that stuff. And there are more people who are doing that in pockets, so it's growing. But part of the reason why it's not been this way is it's not always been a lucrative space, and it's still becoming a lucrative space. But now that there are more investor conversations, so these days there are more people who have some distribution in the US and all these places who are coming with good money. And so you can have foresight. So if you have some investment of say $1 million or $2 million, which is small for a Hollywood movie. But in Nigeria, if you're doing like a TV show for kids, maybe like an animated TV show for kids, it gives you a period to train people because you have money to keep them, execute projects, and then hopefully go for your Series B, as they say. But yeah, so it hasn't always been in that space, but this is in the space of the last 1 or 2 years wherein there are these investor conversations, there's more money in the space. So now it makes sense to train people, because part of the reason we're training people, and we've organized Quadron Studios, and we've organized a couple of trainings. Part of the reason with the training is if you don't have recurrence, so we used to be focused on advertising for clients. And if you're anybody who's in the advertising space, there are two tiers. You're either on a retainership with some big companies, which we've had those for some time, and it's amazing, but you're at the beck and call of those companies. And you're either that or you're doing projects from client to client. But in essence, you don't really have control of your revenue. And so you can't really dictate where things are. But in terms of like TV shows or movies, you know that let's say you're doing a series type TV show. You know that, okay, there's season one. Season one will take a year and a half or 2 years to produce. You already have the money to fund a year and a half production. So it makes sense to train those people and keep them for that year and a half. And hopefully the show does well enough to season two, and then you maintain those people. And so there's a more end goal in sight. And when you train those people, you know you can keep them. Because if you train people and you can't keep them, there's this other studio who has a project that's ongoing. So now your guys are there. And so that's always been the conundrum that we faced for a while. But thankfully it's changing.
That's nice. All I see is like there's a lot of money going into this, and there's a lot more money than needs to go into this, obviously.
Oh yes, yes.
Right. So, what device did you use to do the whole thing?
So I typically use a laptop on a desktop.
Are you one of those Apple people?
Graphics card. No, I'm not Apple guy. No offense to anybody. Apple. I use Apple phones though. Although if I had my, I like Samsungs. That's another conversation.
Let's put this pin in that.
But yeah, Windows mostly because of just scalability. Can upgrade your RAM easily, add more graphics card, change things. You know.
Yeah.
And that's what I use. And it was mostly done locally. We didn't do any cloud services per se. So yeah, it was most of it was done on a laptop actually. But yeah.
Nice one. Do you usually Okay, let me not assume, but is it usually a laptop thing? Do you need a much more stronger laptop for big projects?
Yeah, so it depends. So I wouldn't really say laptop specifically. It's more about the specs of the laptop. So there are some laptops that are, like, if you have a laptop that has like a 16 gig RAM or like a 3080 GTX or like some Jagan. Well, if you're a gamer, you know what I'm saying. If you have like a high-end laptop, then you can do it. But desktops are a lot more robust in most cases. If you have a laptop and a desktop with the same specs, most times the desktop will perform more than the laptop. Mm-hmm. And so you find that most people use desktops. But it really doesn't matter. Anyone can be. I find sometimes laptop being more convenient because you could just go to some coffee place. I work from home mostly these days.
Nice.
But sometimes with the desktop, you're just stuck at home. The laptop, you can go get coffee, chat with people, work on the side. People are like, hey, this is amazing stuff. You're like, yeah, you can do that
too. Yeah. Yeah, right. So, like, okay, I think this would probably be the last question, and I'm going to, like, merge, like, two questions in one. So, you've been doing this for how long?
So, I... Yes.
2013?
Yes, so I started out 2013, but I was mostly doing animation. I've had like a growth. Mm-hmm. 2013, well, mostly doing like 3D animation, focused on that. Mm-hmm. 2015, I got into like interactive gaming type stuff. Mm-hmm. 2018, we decided to try, because at the time, people weren't doing high quality, at least a lot of people mm-hmm. weren't doing high quality visual effects in Nigeria at the time. And we wanted to go all out. So we did a project, the Skinnybee project with Rat Talking. And we wanted to see how far we could push it. Because if you could do that, you're close enough to do maybe the dragon in Game of Thrones. You're somewhere there because you could do an animal talking. And all that. So you're close enough because the hardest thing in computer graphics and visual effects is making an animal look like it's there. It's easy to make like a camera or a computer, something that is inanimate, but making an animal look and move like it's there. And so that was the first time. So 2018 was when myself and my company hit that mark that, okay, oh, we can actually do visual effects. And so since then, we've been doing that also. But I think I'm what people call a 3D generalist, because I'm like everywhere. Like, there are some projects. Like, I've done projects that are more interactive, like virtual reality projects. And I'm equally as passionate as that because I have a background as a gamer. And so I'm equally as passionate as that as being in the normal animation that Disney and Moana and all that stuff, because I love those two. And I'm equally as passionate with visual effects. So it's just...
A lot of pies.
What of?
A lot of pies.
Oh, yes. And those things interact with each other. I think even right now where technology is, 3D is already mainstream with the whole metaverse thing. So it's already here to stay. And now there's AI. And so it's going to make it easier for more people to access 3D. And so, yeah, I've always been interested in the fusion of arts and technology. And I think that's what informed me dancing around these three tiers of 3D animation and visual effects.
Right. So... this is probably the last question. And so what lessons have you learned so far that you would say to your younger self, like, you should have done this or should you have done this? And how would you advise someone coming into the space to, like, go about the entire thing?
That's a good question. I would say go out more. Network more, focus more on the business. But it's not even because you have to do both. I think you need to have time to hone your craft. But I also think you need to be fully aware that monetization is a big thing. And so while honing your craft, be able to engage with the local and also international markets to see how to monetize. For a lot of people at the time when I started this, monetizing locally was the thing. These days I'm glad that people have figured out how to connect with the international market, spot some distributors, spot some investors, get funding. that's where the industry is, and I think that's where the money is. So I wouldn't necessarily look down on my younger self for not focusing on that. Maybe it wasn't just the time, but I think the industry has grown into that. So anybody who's in the space who is into animation and visual effects, there also needs to be an understanding of the business, how to monetize, global practices. If it's possible for you to work with a couple of foreign clients, that would be a very huge learning for you, because you would understand industry standards, you understand work ethic, timing, delivering on time, things like that. And it's something a couple of people, including myself, have battled in the industry, particularly because you're working with, in some cases, clients who really don't know specifically what they're looking for. And then there's Nigeria happening to you with the lights and all that. And thankfully, we've gone past all those with solar and everything.
Yeah. But
yes. Focus on the business. Understand business. If possible, go take a business course. Know how to pitch your ideas and be able to scale what you're working on. Because ultimately, we want to tell stories. And doing something cool in your room, it's cool, but at some point you need to figure out the format that people can pay for and scale towards that format. And most times you need funding to do that.
Right. I think I got that. Like, from all you said, funding is very important.
Yeah, probably said funding. Yeah, it's a business. No, only
the fact. Abby? Yeah. Right. So thank you so much, Uche, for joining us today. Thank you, everyone, for watching until now. Thank you for commenting. If you didn't comment, go and comment. Thank you so much. So thank you so much for commenting and liking the video. Thank you for subscribing as well. If you've not subscribed, please subscribe. And if you're listening to us on any of your podcasting platforms, Google, Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, anyone that I don't know of, well, thank you so much for listening. Yeah, OGs, you've been listening for like years now. So well done. Thank you so much. And don't forget to go and register for FinTech Summit. Important. And register for that. And I hope you enjoyed today's interview. Thank you so much, Uche, again for joining us. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Bye, everybody.
Ciao.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.